From KCRW, this is DNA Design and Architecture. I'm Frances Anderton. Many cities right now are re-evaluating structures that are emblematic of systemic racism. Well, in Los Angeles, you may not find, for example, statues of slave traders, but you can find the markers of the many ways in which race has shaped place.
Redlining, restrictive covenants, urban renewal, the siting of freeways through minority communities are all different ways that planning and urban design have been a part of some of the current issues and inequities in terms of real estate.
This is Judith Taylor. She's a partner with HR and A Advisors, which consults on real estate and economic development. She focuses on a wide range of real estate projects in the Southland, with a special focus on transportation-related development in the Crenshaw District and South LA. She is grappling with how to bring much-desired new development to these areas without also engendering gentrification and displacement. And she says that this is a challenge that has its roots in structural racism that has been built literally into the fabric of our lives.
It starts with slavery and the freeing of the slaves and the lack of assets or, you know, reparation for that slavery. And it begins there and it proceeds throughout time. You know, the GI Bill was a way that many Americans were able to achieve home ownership. And at the time, African Americans were not able to take part in that American dream.
The George Floyd protests have forced a reckoning in so many areas, including real estate. So we're going to talk about building equity in an industry that typically prioritizes profit over people. We'll talk about whether white people should think twice before buying in a historically black neighborhood. And we will consider whether a prize in the name of a famed developer, J.C. Nichols, should be renamed. First, let's go back to 1939 and the Homeowners Loan Corporation map of Los Angeles for that year. Areas are highlighted in colors: green or first grade, blue for second grade, yellow third, and then the fourth red. Beverly Hills is all green. Much of the region is yellow. South Santa Monica and Venice, Boyle Heights, and the area then known as South Central LA are red.
And banks and mortgages really had a practice where they were grading neighborhoods. And if there were minorities in a community, they got a lower grade. And how that played out was that these grades were coded on a map, and the D grade, which was the worst grade, was actually red. And so that's where you get the term redlining from. And that really, you know, limited the opportunities for minorities, African-Americans and other minorities to reach the American dream of owning their own homes. And it really was one of the ways that also promoted segregation. Neighborhoods that had a mix of minorities and whites were downgraded. And so that, you know, pushed minorities into certain communities and white folks into others.
You have the redlining, and then there's also restrictive covenants.
Mm-hmm. And then racially restrictive covenants refer to contractual agreements that were typically listed in deeds that prohibited the purchase, lease, or occupation of properties by particular groups, including African Americans or others. And you'll actually find throughout Southern California, Leimert Park, many of the cities in Southeast Los Angeles, there are, and sometimes there still are, these restrictive covenants within the deeds of homes.
And in fact, I happen to be looking at your website, your company's website, HR&A, and I saw that one of your, I think, colleagues had written a letter about racial injustice in real estate and how ULI, the Urban Land Institute, needs to change the name of one of the big prizes that it gives, because the prize is in the name of a guy in real estate.
Yeah, the Nichols Prize.
They want to change the name of the Nichols Prize because Mr. Nichols was a big promoter of restrictive covenants. Do you think the J.C. Nichols Prize should be renamed?
Certainly, yes.
Let's just talk about urban renewal. It's on the face of it, urban renewals, what's wrong with that? Sounds good. But actually, that too has been a tool of enabling segregation and injustice in housing.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And urban renewal, which, you know, has happened across the country and in LA was particularly formative in the 1950s and 1960s, was an urban planning kind of trend to redevelop areas. And often it was to pull down what they called slums and to put up brand new development. And in many places, this led to the removal of vital minority communities. And in LA in particular, the siting of freeways, the Santa Monica Freeway, the 10, was routed kind of straight through one of the most prestigious Black communities at the time, Sugar Hill. These issues have a historic basis, but they continue today. The siting of freeways, the 105 freeway, which opened a couple decades ago, went through also, you know, lower income communities and minority communities. And there's the Alameda Corridor, which is a corridor that connects Long Beach, which is the Port of Long Beach and the Port of Los Angeles, which is a huge logistics hub, and brings trucks up through downtown LA, and they spread through the Inland Empire. And it's kind of the place where most of American products actually come through. The Alameda Corridor specifically goes through a lot of low-income minority communities. And this corridor is underneath the ground. And these communities have to deal with the toxic pollution coming from the Alameda Corridor. Yet there are like no advantages to them. Like they just actually have these trucks coming through and they don't receive any benefit.
You're listening to Judith Taylor, and you heard her mention the Sugar Hill neighborhood that was upended by the 10 freeway. That was in the historic West Adams area over near USC. Well, further west in Santa Monica, the construction of the 10 freeway tore through another thriving Black community called Belmar. As we mentioned, South Santa Monica and Venice were once redlined because of their mixed communities. Well, now there is a new kind of urban renewal challenge, and that is coming from gentrification. Racially restrictive covenants were outlawed by the Supreme Court in the late 1940s. African Americans moved west from South Central, buying property in Leimert Park, Baldwin Hills, and the rest of the Crenshaw District. Many whites then living in that area fled to the valley. Well, now the Crenshaw District has become desirable to people of many backgrounds seeking a somewhat affordable home to buy. And this is making the area unaffordable to the folks who've grown up there. It is creating a lot of tension. And this is where Judith Taylor's work comes in.
I've been doing work in the Crenshaw area for a little over 10 years, and some of the first studies that I had performed in that area were around looking at a vision plan for improving and redeveloping areas in the North Crenshaw corridor. And that was before the announcement of the Crenshaw LAX line. And at that point in time, in the Crenshaw area, there had been very little new development. Previous to about 2007, 2008, there had been almost 30 years where virtually nothing new had, no major new developments had occurred. Community members just wanted to get new development in the area because it had been so long. And then come 2007, there was a recession, and which hit that area pretty badly. But thereafter, prices increased substantially. Between kind of approximately 2007 and 2018, prices doubled, if not tripled, in that neighborhood. And now you're in a position where people who were clamoring for development now cannot, you know, afford to actually live in their community anymore. And a new residential development often is priced at a point due to feasibility that really isn't serving the existing community. And so it becomes very important to think about benefits that are going to support existing residents as well as these new residents.
Anger around these issues came to a head recently when residents of the Crenshaw District fought back against the purchase of the Baldwin Hills Crenshaw Plaza by the outside development group CIM, C-I-M, which had planned to turn the historic mall into a tech complex with very little affordable housing attached. And this is the kind of challenge that Taylor faces, how to reconcile profit-making development with community needs like affordable housing and local investment. She worked on this at Jordan Downs, that is the 700-unit public housing complex in Watts that had become deeply distressed. There, her challenge was to figure out how to bring in a mix of incomes. The complete overhaul of Jordan Downs is currently under construction. Taylor also worked on the early planning for development attached to the Crenshaw LAX line, and she made the case for a Leimert Park station at the time when the planned route did not even include a stop at this heart of the Crenshaw district.
My work is to actually help improve, you know, that intersection between the needs of the community and the needs of the developer. But there really is much more work to be done. We need to be pushing jurisdictions to examine how they spend their budgets and how they're spending their funding. We need to have tough conversations with governments to really create real change. And we need to ensure that we have the right people at the table. So improving community engagement so that it's really reflective of the actual community. Also, even within our field, we need to ensure that our field is reflective of the communities in which we're working in as well. Currently, there's approximately 2,500 licensed Black architects out of 95,000 in this country, and that's really a travesty.
What would you say to white listeners to this conversation who might be thinking, I really, really want to buy a house, and the only place that I could find a house that's perhaps in the kind of 600 or a condo in the $600,000 region, you know, is in Inglewood. That's where I'll move to. Would you recommend that they think twice about making that decision?
I don't know if it's my place to tell someone to think twice about coming to a community. But what I would also say is, you know, I had a conversation with someone I know who lives in the Adams district, quite close to USC. This is a minority person. And, you know, she was talking about that website. I think it's called Neighborhood.
Oh, next door.
Yeah, next door. And she was basically saying how, you know, this is community she lived in all her life. And, you know, the area around USC was not looked upon favorably for a very long time and was considered extremely dangerous and you know, wasn't an area that people were interested in moving to. And my friend had been living there her whole life. So, you know, 30 plus years. And she was out riding a bike with her mom. And then at some point ended up looking at next door and realized that somebody had written something saying, oh, these two suspicious ladies are riding bikes around my community. And I think that's actually my commentary there. How do we support residents who have actually been living in these communities? How can they benefit from the new development and the new folks who get added to the community rather than being pushed out?
To your friend next door this weekend announced that they were going to try and address some of this kind of veiled racism that is out there. But if we could just wrap actually by just going to your own life, you yourself grew up in a part of, I guess, the real estate story that's relatively recent. Just tell us about that, if you will.
Yes. So I grew up in the Inland Empire, in Ontario initially, and, you know, in the 80s. and that is actually much of the reason that I do the work that I do. I saw I actually ended up moving at some point from one community, like Ontario, which was a very working class community, and moving to Chino Hills, which is more of a white collar community. And really seeing the difference in economic opportunities that are available based on where you live. And one of my goals in the work I do is to ensure that all, you know, all people have better economic opportunities, and also, you know, good places, like good placemaking and good places. In the Inland Empire, I actually often tell the story about how my parents got our eggs from a hen house. It was a semi-rural community that got developed as I grew up there. And so I saw the development of tract homes across Southern California, and the development of shopping centers. And again, really, you know, saw the differences that persist based off of where people live and what community you're living in.
Well, Judith Taylor, it's really a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been great speaking with you.
You've been listening to Judith Taylor. She's an economic development consultant with HRNA Advisors. She's also worked extensively on issues of health and equity in relation to the built environment. I'm Frances Anderton. Thank you for listening to the DNA podcast. Stay tuned and stay well.